me!
Robes torn and disheveled, guns drawn and clenched in a white-knuckled grip, Azrist sprinted through the darkness. His glowing eyes were frenzied, his hair grown out and disheveled. The suns on this plane had been extinguished long before his arrival. The only lights that remained were flickering street lamps and his blue flames, the final sputtering candles holding eternal night at bay. Water cascaded over precarious crumbling stone, flowing over the edges of a hydroelectric dam. It poured endlessly into a seeming abyss. There were no railings. Either this maintenance walkway hadn't had them, or they had been destroyed. A few steps in the wrong direction would send him plummeting to an almost certain death. Somewhere in the dark, Azrist could hear Ravier indulging.
Show yourself!
I would, but I can't help but notice you're armed again. You've been many things over the years. Boring, humorless, pathetic, but dishonorable. I would never have thought you capable of it.
I will not make deals with demons!
You mean you won't honor deals? A world for your word, Azrist. I spared a world for you, and you responded by shooting me in the chest! Quite unbecoming of a priest, don't you think?
Cease your drivel and show yourself!
What cruel injustice to be betrayed by a man of the cloth. By all accounts, I should withdraw my offer of a truce. But look at me. I'm practicing forgiveness. Aren't you proud?
Nothing but deceit!
What do I gain from deceit at this point?
You need no reason for your insanity, cannibal!
Insanity? How am I insane? Enlighten me, as you so oft professed is your purpose. Enlighten me.
You torture for pleasure. You slay without remorse. You consume the flesh of your brothers.
Tsk, tsk, priest. That's evil, not insanity.
Two sides of the same coin.
Maybe, but there's a sinister detail in that analogy. One that exposes your goddess.
How dare you!
Muzzle flashes lit yellow snapshots in the dark, capturing single blurry frames of Ravier as he dodged.
A coin can only land on a single face. Evil is the willful choice of wrongdoing. Insanity is an illness that prohibits choice. Innocent by definition. It is impossible to be both!
Silence this drivel! Do not insult me by trying to spin your wickedness!
I am offering you peace, despite knowing you might betray me again! How is that wicked?
It matters not! You're an illness for which there is but a single cure, oblivion!
So, the Prime Clemency has abandoned her mission?
You have no concept of her ways!
I don't? Her words spilled from your lips endlessly throughout these many years. No soul unworthy of redemption. All can be forgiven! Just walk the light with me, Ravier, and repent. You are not beyond salvation.
It is too late! Your corruption is too deep to save! Redemption is for man, which you are no longer!
Then tell me one thing. At what point was I too far gone? Which of my litany of sins was too great for the goddess's infinite forgiveness? I'll tell you when! The offer of redemption was revoked only once I reached to take it! The sermons were reworded only once I began to speak of adherence. And I was beyond saving only once I was finally ready to be saved. And you noticed it too, my old nemesis. I know you did. Your battle trance is long lost. You can't aim for shit. Your faith wavers, and who could blame you? Deep down, you know what you do is unjust.
I never question the goddess's decrees. Only execute them.
Not allowed, but the thoughts pry their way in. I've come to know you so very, very well now. Try as you might, you can't stop yourself from thinking.
What I think is unimportant.
I'm not insane, Azrist. You're not insane either. But this whole thing, this broken thing, this pointless dance we do, that's insanity. This life where we sojourn from place to place, murdering each other just to rise again. Azrist, it has no purpose.
I ward the flock. I save them from your vampirism.
Quite the contrary. You're delivering me to them. Did you ever think about that? You slay me and I die, only so I may return to fresh worlds and fresh meat. If you truly wanted to protect the innocent, you'd take my peace and keep me from the next flock. Why not? Here we are in this dead world. No one left to save. No one to eat. In the name of peace and forgiveness, I offer you my deal again. Let us have a truce. If not for me, then for the sake of the worlds ahead.
Why?
I wish to see what happens.
Nothing will happen.
Isn't that what you want?
Perhaps. But it is not what you want.
True.
Then what are you expecting to prove?
I don't know. I have many theories, and if you agree to this truce, I will share them. Whatever our strange life is, it is not about salvation or consumption. It's about continuation. The commandments keep changing whenever we reach a conclusion, and that is no mistake. For whatever reason, the gods need us to keep going. The only way out is if we stop it ourselves. So, let's stop and see how the deities handle a laying down of arms. Let us try their patience and see if they will reveal their true colors.
You will not speak of her that way.
Fine. My apologies. Stay here with me and prove me wrong.
No!
Oh, come on! Really?
You are Ravia the Undying, perpetrator of the primal sin. You indulge in the flesh of your own kind and—
I haven't eaten anyone in days, Azrist! I'm weak. I can't eat this grass and the animals. I keep vomiting it all up. I sweat as I see the people walking around with their meaty bodies and ticking minds. They approach me to help, and my gut screams for their blood.
You lie! I heard you as I approached just now. You continue to consume human flesh.
Didn't you say I was no longer human?
Ravier stepped into the circle of Azrist's light. His left arm was missing, torn from its socket. His right eye was gone as well, along with sections of his cheeks. His right hand only had three of his taloned fingers left. He was limping, bleeding, his power drained.
You're disgusting.
I had no choice. If I wanted to spare the humanity
you so desperately fight to save. Rather poetic, is it not? Do you find this peculiar atonement worthy of a truce? An eye for an eye, as it were? I'm not much of a threat to you.
Azurist could practically feel the sin marking his soul as his guns retracted back into their hidden holsters.
Prime Clemency, Goddess of Forgiveness, absolve me of my weakness.
It's in the name, my old nemesis. If she is who she says she is, you will be absolved. And hey, if she can't forgive you, then she can't forgive anyone, right?
I still pray.
Of course you do.
You have your truce.
Perfect.
Ravier held out his remaining hand. Azurist winced at the sight of the bloody, mangled fingers, but he took it.
Well, what now?
Huh?
What do we do now?
Wait, I suppose.
This is strange.
It is.
This is tedious.
It is. Do you still have your scrolls?
Always. You would like to read her word?
No, not your scriptures. Those parchments you used to scribe on. The scrolls of transgressions.
I stopped denoting your sins a long time ago.
Ravier held out his remaining hand.
Here. Give me your quill, too.
Ravier took the quill and parchment to a flat piece of rubble.
What are you doing? What are these dots?
So, what you do is you take turns making lines, and you try to make a box.
Try again, Zraya. Meditate. Meditate with me. Feel her breathing. Breathe with her, with us. There. You remember now. Perfect. Okay. Easier this time. You must awaken as you sleep. Zraya. Easy. Stay relaxed. Stay calm. Awaken as you sleep. Like I've said 20,000 times now. Don't wake up. Awaken while they sleep. Join me, Zraya. Zraya?
What?
Oh, finally. About time you figured it out.
I figured it out a while ago. I just didn't feel like coming.
You prick.
What do you want?
We got a lot to discuss. This is the only place we can really talk without them hearing.
How do you know?
I've been working on this mental brain woogity shit for years now. Testing limits, learning, gaining control.
Gaining control?
Meditating lets us go outside the thought process. Lets us escape them. Go outside everything.
I know that. I used to do it all the time.
Yeah, but you can go further than outside. It took years of practice, but I managed to find this place.
What is this?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
It feels kind of like dying.
Yeah, I noticed that too. There's no raging or mixing, it's
raw. This is so bizarre. Are we even in Amos's head anymore?
I mean, we have to be. right?
We have to be, but still, it feels different somehow.
Maybe. That's beside the point.
I really want to know where we are.
If I figure it out, I'll tell you, promise. That's not important right now.
All right, then. Why did you bring me here?
Because we need to be on the same page. You're the only one I can trust against these freaks.
What do you mean? You've been for Kalios' rebellion this whole time. You've practically been playing right-hand man.
Yeah, playing is the right word. Kalios's full of shit. He doesn't have any plans to get us bodies.
How do you know?
You can't tell. His placated promises and dismissal crap. It's been years, Zariah. He's got this meticulously detailed major revolution plan about to launch, and all he's got for us is some vague brush-off about clones. Come on, you aren't dumb. Mostly. You're not telling me you still buy that shit, are you?
Never did.
And as if my hunches weren't enough, I can feel it now, too.
What do you mean?
I'm learning to see slivers and snippets of patterns. The channels that we all default to when responding to stimulus, they're visible, and they tell you things.
What the hell are you talking about?
I can catch glimpses of thoughts, little shapes in the imagined channels of our borrowed mind. I can sort of read them.
You reading minds is one of the most utterly disturbing things I've ever heard.
It's true. I used your patterns as a base. I knew you like a brother before we became mental roommates, and now I can read you like a book. I understand what you really think of me.
A bag of hammers could have told you what I think of you.
No, I mean, I understand it. I can see how deep those channels of hate go. It's practically half your identity. And it ain't the whole story.
I spent my entire life dealing with you. You think you know me well? I know you even more.
You sort of do. But what you know is tainted. It's tainted by hazy memories, reinforced by bias built into you by that lying bitch. It's not your fault. It's not entirely my fault either. We're the monsters she made us. But we don't have to be.
I know what I am, and I know what you are. My memories of your atrocities are razor sharp.
Prester Industries. That's the linchpin. The foundation for your unflinching belief, and the lens that colors all the other memories.
You murdered children. Children!
You believe I did. Zariah. That memory, we need to share it.
What?
A sub-dream, you and me. Memories decay and warp with time, even vivid turning points like that. We emphasize parts and lose others. We're going to relive it together, put the pieces in place.
No, you stay the fuck out of my head!
Relax, Raya. We're gonna wake everyone up.
You stay out of my head.
We're already in each other's head. Come on, Shrier. Don't you want the truth?
I know the truth.
You're fine. Then share your truth with me. Show me what happened. Show me how wrong I am. Good. Staying in his mystery place is exhausting. Come join me when you're ready.
Vilas vanished. Shrier lingered for a moment, experiencing the bizarre other of this space alone.
What is this?
The place declined to answer, which may or may not have been anthropomorphizing. Seemingly out of options, Zariah let go. As if rejected, he was thrown back in his room in the memory palace. It was very dim, the details blurred by Amos's unconsciousness. Vilas was somehow already here on the floor, in a sub-dream. Zariah stared at the dream. It was as he remembered so far. They were fighting down a maze of corridors, Vilas in retreat, Zariah going in for the kill. Military guards assisted Zariah, cutting off escape avenues, firing pulse rifles and throwing grenades. It was already wrong. The guards had foolishly been trying to capture Vilas alive with nets and tranquilizers. The lies angered Zraya enough for him to enter the subdream. He fell in.
Open fire!
And everything shifted. Zraya and Vilas can both feel it. Their memories entangling and influencing each other, averaging out. The different perspectives making the image clearer. They were somehow both themselves and each other. The type of illogical logic that only occurred in dreams. Yet, Zraya could somehow tell this was more than that. It was a dream, but also an account. Vilas ran, swerving around shots and killing soldiers in his way. He couldn't jump very well in the tight corridors and was reduced to a power stride. Still inhumanly fast, but nothing like Zraya's speed. Vilas stole a gun and fired it backwards. Zraya dodged, but he tumbled into some haphazardly stacked crates. Or maybe it had been metal drums. Or a cart. Or a person. The rooms and turns didn't make spatial sense. The details were blurred and sometimes conflicted. Sometimes the guards were bystanders. The corridors changed width and shape as details they'd both forgotten failed to fill in. Another turn, and the closing security door came into view. Vivid and clear, they both remembered that door. The blast door in front of the daycare center to protect the kids in an emergency such as this one. The blast door that Vilas got through just in time. The blast door that closed on Zraya. The details stopped shifting as the dream had only one perspective for each view. Vilas inside and Zraya outside. Vilas's perspective was somewhat clear. He remembered this well as one of his finest victories. Outside the door, Zraya's perspective was a mess, warped and twisted by time, stress, and trauma. Details shifted rapidly as everyone simultaneously panicked, stayed calm, started barking commands, and froze in shock and horror. They shifted uniforms and weapons. Objects flickered between sizes and shapes. Zraya was banging on a window pane that wasn't there.
You touch your hair on their heads, I won't!
Vilas's memory of the internal layout of the room, making a window in that location impossible. There were a bunch of little kids huddled in a corner as part of an emergency procedure. A lot of the kids weren't taking it seriously, talking to one another and playing quiet little games. To them, it was just another drill. The teacher's eyes went wide, and she froze. Vilas shushed her and waved her over, enforcing the command with a glare. Her legs shaking, she obeyed.
Good afternoon.
The teacher said nothing, merely trembling.
Your guest speaker is here. Could you please introduce me to the tots?
She still trembled, but to her credit, she stood her ground between him and the children. She gave him the most pathetic scowl and shake of the head, but it was more than most would have done in her position.
Oh, don't give me that look. I ain't gonna hurt him. I will, however, plaster the wall with a short-sighted teacher who wouldn't get out of my way. I'm sure the little ones would find that a bit traumatizing. Wouldn't you agree?
She looked over at her students, and then back at Vilas.
Let's keep this one peaceful, yeah?
Resigned, she turned toward the class.
Actually, hold on a second. Can that phone connect to the intercom system?
Yes.
Excellent. Would you be so kind?
He stared her toward the red phone. Hesitantly, she picked it up and dialed a series of numbers. Vilas held out his hand expectantly, and she shakily surrendered the phone.
Thank you, Mum. Testing 1, 2, 3. Ah, good. Thank you, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your newest test subject turned substitute teacher, Vilas. I'm sure there's some concern amongst you that an escaped violently tortured lab rat is locked in your daycare center with your precious future generation.
I would be concerned too. Oh, who knows what an unstable mind would do in such a position.
Oh, the extreme anxieties a panicked parent can only imagine.
Lilas glanced at the kids, all staring at him with varying degrees of confusion and incomprehension. He gave them a big grin and waved enthusiastically.
Anywho, as one of your many invasive tests revealed, the only way to rid your world of my presence is the demise of a certain whiny, white-haired weenie pants. If you want your children to remain happy little uninjured campers, I suggest you remove our friend from this mortal coil as soon as you can. The more inventive, bombastic, and downright horrendous the demise is, the better. Think big! Points for creativity! Impress me, and you'll get your little toss back safe and sound. Scout's honor. Disappoint, and, well, I don't think anyone out there wants me earning points for creativity, do they? Have fun, everyone!
Lila searched the phone for the mute button and pressed it. The red connection light started blinking. He dropped the phone, letting it dangle from the hook, and looked over toward the kids. They stared at him, puzzled, too young to fully grasp what was said.
Oi, Teach, aren't you going to give your guest speaker an intro? Go on now.
Kids, we have a guest speaker today.
Hello, kids. My name is Mr. Vilas. Can you all give me a big hello, Mr. Vilas?
Hello, Mr. Vilas.
Oh, come on. I know you got better lungs than that. Hello, Mr. Vilas.
Hello, Mr. Vilas.
I feel so unwelcome. And here I was ready to give you a big story about a guy who can explode on command. Kaboom! Don't you kids like fireworks and big noises?
Yeah, I like fireworks.
Thylas looked around, thinking, until he spotted something in the back.
Stories, fireworks, big noises, and free access to the candy cabinet?
Yeah,
if that's what you want, then I gotta hear a big, loud, hello, Mr. Vilas!
Hello, Mr. Vilas!
Ah, there we go.
Vilas smiled his warmest smile. With the kids now completely disarmed, the teacher looked even more distressed. Vilas took advantage of the conveniently high ceiling and flipped over the kids all the way to the other side of the room.
All you can eat! Is everyone ready?
Yes!
Vilas ripped open the cabinet door, grabbed the giant bowl of assorted wrapped candies, and leapt back, intentionally letting them spill everywhere. The kids scrambled joyfully, grabbing as much as they could hold. Outside, the scene became clearer to Soraya. He remembered the staff of Prester Industries not giving in at first, the tension in the air, everyone on the edge of panic but still cooperating. Vilas's perspective was repairing his own accounts.
Templeman, get to the security center and see if there's anything that can be done to override the panic door. Stevenson, head to the armory. Hodge, the Sector K construction site. See if there's anything that could get this door open.
You know there's nothing that can open those doors from the outside.
Do it!
The commander was struggling to keep his men under control, to keep them from turning on Zraya. The soldiers had heard him, but nobody had obeyed. Zraya could feel the looks, the long, conflicted looks.
Now!
Still, nobody moved.
We are not giving in to that freak! We're gonna get this door open, and we're gonna get our children back. Fear is not going to drive our actions. Got it?
Zraya continued searching the door, looking for any sort of weakness, trying not to think about the crosshairs that were trained on his back.
Little Jason waited and waited for his sister to come back with his water, but she didn't return.
Back inside, Vilas and the kids sat on the floor in a circle, their legs crossed.
Little Jason was alone. He pulled his blanket tight around him,
The darkness so black he couldn't see his toys or his bear, or most importantly, the closet.
The lights were out, the only illumination a flashlight in Vilas's hand, providing eerie underlighting to his face. The children had stopped eating their candy. They were enraptured, scared so stiff that they could barely breathe.
And then, from the closet, a blue flash of light lit the room. The boy cried out again, "Mammy! Mammy!" This time, no matter how much he yelled, nobody opened the door. Jason stopped. The blue light from the closet was growing. And then he heard something worse. A horrible spectral laughter. The blue light grew brighter. And then he saw fire. Blue fire spread and spread, burning hotter and brighter. The laughter grew louder and louder. Soon, Jason's bed was surrounded in flames. He had nowhere left to run. And he was never heard from again.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. It's okay. None of that was real. It's just a pretend story.
Oh, yeah, it's okay, kids. It's just a pretend story. People don't just burst into flames for no reason. I mean, nothing like that would ever happen to me.
Vilas burst into flames and ran around the room, flailing his arms in the air. The pandemonium was perfect. The chaos at its peak. Vilas ducked away and ran toward the phone. He unmuted it, hit the speaker button, and held the receiver up high.
No! You monster!
Zweya punched the steel door fruitlessly, even as the bones in his hands broke.
That's my Sophie. No.
Stand down!
Everyone started shooting, some at Zweya, others trying to protect him. It all devolved into chaotic crossfire. Zweya couldn't do anything, his legs giving out as he collapsed into a rapidly growing pool of his own blood. He saw the last shot, the one that killed him. It was a man whose face he couldn't recall, but he remembered having called that man a friend. Amos's pulse was racing, the nightmare taking its toll. But somehow, through sheer determination, Zweya managed to keep himself under control. This had to be confronted. He left the subdream and fell back into meditation.
Bullshit! Absolute bullshit!
It's how I remember it. It's probably not perfect, but it's nowhere near as warped as your memory.
Why are you even doing this? You think you can manipulate me? Get on my good side? That's even more delusional than this garbage story you're trying to serve me.
Being in his brain for 2 decades has shown me a lot. Memories are liquid. I've seen how they warp and twist. Trauma and anger amplify it, make it more extreme. Your hatred of me turned it from pain into determination. And your mind tweaked the memory, added details to make the story worse and worse, to keep it warm. Like feeding wood to a dying fire. You saw how hazy your memories were, how some of the details don't fit.
Stop trying to fuck with my mind!
Think about it this way, then. Why the hell would I murder a bunch of kids?
Because you're a monster!
An entertaining monster. You know, the kind an audience can enjoy, with a little healthy guilt suppression. You said you know me, Zweya, so put the pieces in place. You really think I'd pick boring-ass child murder over the opportunity to showboat and fuck with people's heads? You know I thought our dueling was a big game with fans and sponsors and shit. You know I've always played to the audience. Witty one-liners and showy fight scenes, all with my trademark winks to the camera. You think anyone would be willing to cheer for me if I murdered a bunch of children? It'd be career suicide. I'd never have another fan again.
Vilas read Zraya with his newly honed senses. He could feel the ancient anger toward him, radiating at his core like hearth and home, but he could also see gears turning.
I mean, I know there have been kids involved in some of the more generic destruction of cities and stuff, but the audience doesn't care about that shit, long as it's not on camera. The audience only cares about what they can see and who they get attached to. They need time to humanize the Moogs. Otherwise, they're just some douche nobodies that they couldn't care less about. Kind of messed up, really. But that's people for you. Not you, though. You cared about everyone. It's why you were so prized by your shit-stained goddess.
Even disregarding literally all the other people you happily tortured and killed, I saw those worlds. I watched them burn. I watched entire planets burn to lifeless ash.
Ah, that's it. Right there. You just completely proved my point. You already know the burning worlds were a lie, but it doesn't matter, does it? The lie's fueling your hatred just as much as the truth. You even forgot it was a lie, didn't you?
I didn't.
Then why did you bring it up? Reflex. Old habits. You see what I mean? You won't believe me, but I'm kind of sorry, I guess.
Zraya's dry look was so potent, it was expressed on Amos's face.
That is the biggest lie you've ever told.
No, I'm not sorry for your bitch nature or anything. Hell no. I'm sorry that you got played, just like I did. And cross my wicked heart, I actually feel a little guilty for helping her. Even if I didn't know I was. We spent our lives getting fucked, and as much of a pussy as you are, you didn't deserve this. I've seen your mind working. I know how you think, and I know what you think of me. You'll never work with the me you think I am, but who you think I am, it ain't the whole story.
I've spent my life dealing with every horrible thing you've done. How could I possibly not know what you are?
You felt what I felt in that dream, right? I know I could feel all the trauma you felt. So tell me, how did I feel?
You were having a field day tormenting those kids.
But why did I feel that way?
Sadism?
A little bit, but you know that ain't the real reason.
Your sick mind thought it was funny.
It was an amazing bit. One of those spontaneous magic moments that defines a career. When I got back, the audience, it was the perfect mix of hysterical laughing, guilty laughing, and a few really offended pearl clutches. That's the response. That's the reaction where you know you fucking nailed it. I even got a mini line of t-shirts with cartoon kids and me panicking and running around in little circles. Oh. The rush you feel when an audience hates how much they love you, Zraya. I really, truly live for that shit.
And that makes what you did okay?
Well, not by your standards. But hopefully it will make us working together a little more tolerable for you.
Who says I'm going to work with you?
Yeah, a little conclusion I can see forming in the back of your mind.
Zraya scowled. Without another word, he left, leaving Vilas alone. Vilas let go of his focus and let himself drift back into his own space in the memory palace. He would leave Zraya alone for now and give those gears time to turn. Not too long ago, it would have been unheard of for a god or goddess to remain in their cornerstone. Now, it was almost a financial necessity. The few who walked by were absorbed in their devices, oblivious to their surroundings. It was almost impossible to tell divine and ascended apart here, with godhood no longer being a guarantee of luster and prestige. How far the mighty had fallen. And unfortunately, those that fall tend to land on those beneath. With gods no longer vacating their old cornerstones, vacancies had become scarce. It had gotten so bad that some Ascended had been rendered homeless, sleeping in the stairwells and corners of what some now called the slums of the gods. Zorius fought the urge to light up as he walked to the door. Luexo had mentioned it no longer being a problem. He was still self-conscious about smelling of tobacco around her. Even with freshly laundered clothes, he knew it was obvious, but at least he could show an effort. It had been far too long since he had heard those chimes. He was glad he got to hear them one last time before Exo achieved enough financial stability to move to quarters more befitting her divinity.
Zorius.
My word. Hello, Exo.
Come in, come in.
You look positively stunning.
You think so?
Absolutely. It's remarkable how well you've retained your identity within your new divinity. You're magnificent, yet I would have recognized you at a glance.
Oh, you flatterer.
I almost feel underdressed.
Come, make yourself at home. Have a seat.
It was as he remembered it. Simple, clean furniture. A tidy living space. And in complete contrast, a disorganized disaster of a desk. Even the cushioned chair he used to frequent was still right where he'd left it.
Ah, quite a bit of nostalgia here. It's been far too long.
It has. Would you like anything? I believe I still have some Milo Stardust. Actually, I think it's your old bottle.
No, thank you. You keep it.
I wouldn't drink it. My new form doesn't drink anything anymore.
Right. No need for food either, I take it.
I just run on P.E. now. Lots and lots of P.E.
That bad?
I'd rather not talk about it, if that's all right.
Of course.
Zorius moved to sit down.
Oh, no.
He hadn't seen it from his initial angle, but an old familiar board was waiting for him on the table.
Hmm? Oh, the Krenti board? We don't have to play. I just thought it might be fun, for old time's sake.
It just so happened to be out and set up.
I like to keep it out, just in case.
I can't help but notice my usual color and usual starting positions already, and positioned in front of my usual chair.
Pure coincidence, I assure you.
Well, let's get the cruelty over with.
Krenti was an ancient, turn-based logic game of planar territory control. It had initially been designed to help Ascended with adjusting to 4D space, but it had evolved out of that purpose thousands of metacycles ago. While the original required three players, this was the more popular, simplified version. It could be played comfortably in 3D space, and only required two players. Exo sat down and made her usual opening move. She always insisted on going first, which was actually a tactical disadvantage when opposing Zorius's typical formation.
I would think you wouldn't be interested in playing a game like this anymore.
Why not?
Let me rephrase. I would think you wouldn't be interested in playing against me.
You're the only other person I know that can play.
Really? We had a whole Krenti club.
That was a long time ago. Besides, you're still fun to play against.
I'll take that as a compliment.
The game began as it usually did, with Zorius staying on the defensive, trying to keep his home plane as protected as possible while he carefully inched into position for a counterattack. Exa was already spread across the board, positioning to capitalize on openings. She spread herself dangerously thin, but she kept herself agile enough to compensate.
Your move.
I'm thinking.
There aren't many moves to consider right now. You're fine.
Yes. It always seems fine until it's not.
That's how Krenti works. Like Sunner always said, chain reactions win over bursts.
I'm painfully aware. How is Sunner?
I don't know. I haven't heard from him. I haven't talked to anyone from the old club in metacycles.
Nobody?
Not really. Everyone we knew moved on in one way or another. Den, Cobras, and Undilia passed before achieving godhood. I haven't talked to Sunner in ages. Toboth is in the Pariah Lands.
What about Tiraflash?
She became Tiraflas Anyakin, but she didn't last long as a goddess.
That's surprising.
Not really. Being a goddess...
Her sudden frown brought old wrinkles back to her fresh, revitalized face. I would think that if anyone could find a way to thrive within the energy crisis, it'd be you.
I'm not in any grave danger, but I'm going to have to make some very inhumane compromises. I have plans that will get me the numbers I need, but I don't know if I have the stomach to go through with them.
I'm sure you'll find a better way.
You can't trick numbers, Zarius. It's simple, cruel math. Planar energy is directly linked to mortal suffering. There isn't much that can be done to circumvent that. I'm trying to distribute the burden evenly among the populations, but that significantly diminishes return. Injustice and inequality are so much more potent earners. Sinandri gifted me a racial crusade starter pack to embed into their subconscious, but I just can't bring myself to install it.
Ah, yes. I remember the advertisements. Quite tasteless.
But it's the only way to have any sort of reasonable cushion. I can try to survive without it, but the odds are not in my favor.
Don't risk it. Starving gods can do terrible things in moments of desperation.
I know. I'd like to think I'm stronger than that, but... Oh, dear. I see how it is, Zarius.
What?
A very clever tactic.
Zarius re-examined the board more attentively. He wasn't winning, but he wasn't losing as poorly as he usually did.
Distract me with my troubles and then go in for the kill.
I would never.
Oh, hush, I'm teasing.
Not that it would help me any.
It would have if you had capitalized on that little defensive blunder.
Where?
It's not there anymore. But yes, no wrath fiercer than a desperate goddess. I'm trying to calculate how much energy I can reasonably survive on, but I have no way of knowing what that is.
Your suffering is to be considered as well. It might be hard to put weight on your subjects at first, but dark times lead to better times. Trust me.
So many aren't going to live under anything but those dark times.
How much control do you have over the plane? Is it magical in nature?
Virtually none, and no. Good real estate is extremely expensive. I couldn't afford a plane with magic or any decent influence. They're so far from the Nexus plane, I won't even be able to see them directly. All I'll have is the scanner output summing up misery in numbers and graphs.
That might be for the best.
No. I need to know. I need to see what I'm doing so I don't become numb to it. I refuse to become numb to it. Win in six.
Zarius looked down at the board. His defenses seemed fine to him, but he knew better.
I'll take your word for it. Good game.
Exo smiled, but he could tell her heart wasn't in it.
You know you can always come to me if you need an agent.
Oh, Zarius, I know you're busy.
Never too busy to help you. Seriously, call me if you need any direct intervention.
I might take you up on that.
Please do.
Exo looked at her cluttered desk, the energy going out of her.
Ah, you need to work, don't you?
I wish more than anything that I didn't. You only just got here.
It's all right. I'm just happy to see you again. I'll get out of your gorgeous new hair.
The grip of her hug was strong, yet another contrast to her old, frail form. Zarius straightened his long coat, smiling at her warmly.
Good cycles will come. Promise.
I hope. It was so good to see you.
You too, Exo. Hang in there.
I'm trying.
Zarius left the cornerstone, stepping out into the dimly lit walkways of the complex. Lighting up, he navigated back to his rail pod, his mind full of troubles once more.